Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. It's broadcast number 708, and it is July the 1st, 1985. Now I have the task of trying to give a picture, an overview of Simon Wiesenthal. I call it a task because to take a person that's catapulted into such a position of fame and fortune, he's parlaying all of his pile of bones into a shouldn't talk about like that, but I do because I think it's total disrespect of these people that he has shown. In my eyes, he wants to parlay that into a $100 million building in Washington, D.C. I'll be giving you the details on that and get permission. He's gotten it from the Parks Department, I believe, to parlay his fame and fortune to a $20 million center in Beverly Hills on Roxbury and Olympic, wanting the California taxpayers to foot $5 million of that, and he hopes to be a candidate for the Nobel Peace Prize. And yet this man has never been a source of controversy. He's lauded. He's loved. Everybody sits at his feet, and nobody has taken apart. Who is Simon Wiesenthal? What has he done? How does he cover up these truths? And that's why I say it's a task, because it's hard to get some people to understand the deceptions, the layers of deceptions around us, and what people will do specifically for fame and fortune and, you know, sell their soul. That's the history, the story of Faust, and it happens over and over again. And it's a terrible tragedy, not so much for the person who does it because he doesn't really care, but it's for the people who believe, the victims who believe, who have the means of finding out the truth and don't use it. That's the tragedy. It isn't that there's any secrets about this person. It's that people want to believe what they're told. And I might go further in a few minutes on why I think that happens. I just for a brief second, and I've had this on the air many times, there are four reasons that I'm tackling this subject, and we'll be doing it for the next two or three weeks. One is the lying about Dr. Hermann Urban's existence in Austria, where he lived, and telling Charles Higham, the author who was working on the untold story of Errol Flynn, that Urban was not in the area and had moved out of the country. Urban had such close contacts to Rudolf Hess, to Hermann Göring, Duke and Duchess of Windsor, and to Hollywood at the scene where the blacklisting is to come, where Senator Joe McCarthy made the biggest harm to any industry, changing the whole nature of Hollywood and casting and screenwriting. And Rudolf Hess, before he flew to England to try and coax the powers that be, he would work with them and help conquer Russia, that Germany and Great Britain would unite. It was Rudolf Hess's genius and skill that organized all the Nazis in South America. That was his haven, South America, so that if Hitler lost the war, he could take America by having his stronghold in South America. So Urban was important for those reasons. The next thing is that Wiesenthal has lied about Martin Bormann. Bormann affects the American banking industry, our economy, our loans that are probably just disappearing into Swiss banks, the effect of the banking collapses in this country, what it could do to America, what it's doing already, the loans that were given out that can't be paid back. The economy, I think, can be directly affected by a living Martin Bormann, and I know Martin Bormann is alive, and he lies about that. Another matter is that Simon Wiesenthal lied about Mengele being an American citizen. The papers from the FBI cited this Nazi Joseph Mengele and his having been in Arizona. And Martin Mendelsohn, the attorney for the Wiesenthal Center, wrote a letter to me that it was not the same Joseph Mengele. And I know they're lying because the way I got the documents, and I've mentioned on the air, was that somebody contacted me who I knew, who was with his uncle and sitting with Joseph Mengele in the Honduras. That's how the whole thing came up, that he was sitting with him. So therefore, I know the man is a pathological liar. For what or why or how, I don't know, except that he was sitting with Joseph Mengele. And this was the truth. And that's why this person sent for the Freedom of Information papers on Mengele from the FBI, and also I'll illustrate in as we unfold the Wiesenthal story, the relationship of Simon Wiesenthal working with J. Edgar Hoover to protect no Nazis in this country, no Nazis who can affect policy also. And so the final blow to the Wiesenthal story, and I've brought up these other things before, is telling the untruth that Joseph Mengele is dead. There's a reason for all these things, of course, and you just have to look for the reasons in the person, the personality, who they meet, and where they are associating with at this level today. And it seems that Simon Wiesenthal always had very, very important contacts. Even as he exited the last concentration camp, he and Prince Radziwill, the soon-to-be pretender to the Polish throne, were leaving arm in arm and went on to Western Europe to do their thing. And the story of Radziwill has to do with I.G. Farben, among other things, and also his Monte Carlo connections to existing Nazis and the Cold War, and the relationship of Wiesenthal to Radziwill I'll go into in a few minutes. It's also important because if Mengele was doing medical work for our government, he was delivered money down in Brazil in American dollars. If, in fact, he was sterilizing Indians in Paraguay and doing medical experiments, the diseases we're seeing now aren't far removed from the goals of people like Joseph Mengele, such as AIDS, the multiple births, the enzyme diseases that can knock out particular races, and save the articles that if you've seen in your papers in the East or North on the cheese scandal, the 50 deaths and the cheese people dying and the babies being aborted from eating cheese in the Mexican Chicano community. I'm going to fill that in for you later. Diseases like Alzheimer's, Legionnaires, swine flu, and so forth. I'm very suspicious of our intelligence community and the Nazis that continue the experimentation on diseases as well as mind control programs that were related to the mentality and to the person of Joseph Mengele. He wasn't just hiding in a house all that time. That is a lie. There may be a time period where he was staying in these homes, but they were safe houses, and there were six or seven of them, and nobody was with him a lot of the time, and he had mobility, and it isn't true that he was seen every other day. And then, of course, if the Fritz Kramer story is true, meeting with Hans Steinecker in Zurich of April 12, 1985, the association of Fritz Kramer with Daniel Graham of Star Wars, with Henry Kissinger, who Henry Gonzalez, the Democrat from Texas, referred to as the hired gun. 2 years ago, he asked Congress if the State Department has leased to Henry Kissinger. All of these people have direct links to Klaus Barbie and Joseph Mengele and the top Nazi network in South America from the day of World War II to the present. And therefore, they touch bases with people that Wiesenthal associates with and knows, accepts money for, has lecture at his institutions, and it's very important now to reappraise Simon Wiesenthal. During these years, he has never made a boo about Hermann Apps going to the Vatican Bank. I called attention to that immediately after the appointment was made when the scandals broke in Italy, the P2, Masonic Lodge, and the link of Vatican to the missing money. He didn't worry about the Waffen-SS wreaths at Bitburg, and I'll give you in a chronological story the account of Wiesenthal and why I think he didn't object to that. He didn't mind Otto Ambrose coming to this country, the scientist who conceived of and patented Zyklon B for Adolf Hitler, or the fact that J. Peter Grace, his partner, gets an appointment at a cabinet level with Ronald Reagan. He doesn't object to Western goals with a member of the Luftwaffe and people from the Waffen-SS working closely with John Singlaub of Western goals, Edward Teller on the board of Western goals with these people. He never speaks up about any of those events that affect America, fascism in America, fascism around the world. He entertains people directly related to those organizations and is associated with them and doesn't blush or think anything about it at all. Wiesenthal Center had no comment about Richard von Weizsäcker becoming the current president of Germany, with his father a defendant at Nuremberg, and the liaison of Hitler to Pope Pius XII should tell you a lot about the future of Germany and the Cold War as it heats up under Ronald Reagan. And the Wiesenthal Center is a subject you can write a book on, all the things they've never dealt with, or take the past 14 years of my radio work and see the subjects and titles and ask yourself, where was the Wiesenthal Center? They did send Rabbi Heyer over to the Vatican when Hermann Apps was put on the paymaster for the Gestapo for Heinrich Himmler, Adolf Hitler, when he was put there in the Vatican as an advisor to the bank. But Rabbi Heyer came home, and Apps is still there for all purposes, so he certainly didn't have much influence. A book came out just this month called Vital Lies, Simple Truths, The Psychology of Self-Deception by Daniel Goleman, G-O-L-E-M-A-N. And the minute I saw that book review, because it's timely that it just came out this past week, I thought how great this is to see this at this time. It was June 16th, 1985. If you want to go to the library and copy it or buy the book or ask for it, I thought of how many people seem to accept the story that Joseph Mengele is dead, and what is in their heads. If you read any of the accounts of this thing, there's no reason to believe he's dead. And why do people believe him? Why do they believe Simon Wiesenthal or Romeo Tummo, the chief of police down in San Paulo, or the Mossad that worked so closely with Stroessner, General Stroessner down in Paraguay, and with the military dictatorships in Argentina and South Africa, and with General Somoza, only linking up with the military death squads that have Nazis in them and associated with them? Well, Vital Lies and Simple Truths is a book that describes how some people have information or ideas or fears they only share with a friend. Now, I have people that have listened to this broadcast for years who listen alone or subscribe to the tapes, and they share them maybe, if they're lucky, with one relative or one friend. Their husband doesn't listen, or their wife doesn't listen, or their son, or their children, or their cousins. And it's something that they only have to themselves, and nobody else can share it. And then this book on lies and deceptions goes into the analysis of why some people have some truths or facts in their lives that they don't even want to tell themselves, that they bury them. And I know that there's long subscribers to these broadcasts that have listened many, many times. And often I'll bring up a name or event, and it's already gone. That it's so important to connect, but people can't keep that right in its proper perspective. It would be changing their whole frame of reference about the world, so they let it all slip away as if it didn't happen. And this particular author, who's the book reviewer and also the reviewer for New Psychology Experiments and what's going on in this country for psychology, and finally wrote his own book, said the group decisions have found to be influenced by groupthink, the tendency to suppress contradictory evidence and to suspend critical judgment so as not to deflate the group's esprit de corps. And he goes into the way, if a group says that this is the way it is, such as in the Joseph Mengele case, they said there's a consensus of opinion that he died, therefore he died. The evidence can't support it, but the consensus of the group think passes to the group, and therefore it is so. This book also says that as members of a society, people acquire and share frames of reference that dictate which acts or events should be attended to and which should be ignored. In other words, if you're going out this past week, you talk about the hostages. You don't talk about Mengele anymore. It's no priority to a lot of people. Well, it may not be in the newspapers now, but it will be the subject of a movie I know that's coming out, of new books coming out. I understand Peter Dale Scott is doing one on the Odessa connections, an area that I've been trying to get the researchers into for 20 years, and there will be a lot of material. But the subject of conversation in the past weeks, it's like the Mengele thing is over. And this author says, a society's painful history is rewritten, whether on the pages of textbooks or more subtly, in well-learned rules about what questions can be or cannot be asked. And he refers to post-war Germany, where people had no idea or said they didn't know because they didn't want to know. And in conclusion, just based on this review, which I'm going to be sure to get, it tells you about the problems of allowing these things to happen. He says when you have collective amnesia, for example, the events of the Nazi era, and you have blind spots, individuals have blind spots, then it will come back to you in some form or other. You think it's convenient now, so you suppress it, and this is a book on how you suppress it, but sure as heck will come back to you. And the author says, people overlook the white lies of others, first as a matter of civility, later as a matter of habit. I'm very proud of you people who listen every week to the radio and subscribe to the tapes, because you are a select few that this doesn't apply to, except the how far you take it after you have it. But you people are very sophisticated in that you're not afraid to listen to truth or listen to information and then check out if I'm right or wrong. I don't, you may not think it's true, everything I say. A lot of people don't agree with everything I say, even though I do, but you don't have to. But I give you the sources every week and you can check it out. And you're certainly not afraid to hear it, but are you afraid to pass it on? Now, the day after the case was closed, the investigation in Brazil, it took 15 days from the opening to the end. The Los Angeles Times has a story, page 12, 99.9% convinced on Mengele, Simon Wiesenthal says. And all he needs is just a little bit more, but he's 99.9%. He is lending his name immediately. That's a good investigation. In his interview, he said he was a little disappointed that Mengele's second wife, Irene, has not yet cooperated with investigators. He said, "Would somebody tell me who else in the family has cooperated? Has the first wife? Has the son? Has the daughter-in-law? Have the nephews?" He singles out, "If only Irene," you know, the song, "Oh, Irene," if she would come through, you know, then we'd have that extra 1% and I'd be 100% sure. That 0.1% he's depending on Irene. Well, you better not depend on Simon Wiesenthal if he's depending for 1%, 0.1%, not even a whole one on Irene. Now, Simon Wiesenthal, after the war, and I'm going to jump around on the chronology of the man. I want to take it in sequential order, but I also want to bring out certain points. After the war, he was working at Camp Glasenbach, Glasenbach. He said, "I was often working there during that period. I worked for the War Crimes Commission, the CIC, which is the Counterintelligence Corps, and the OSS. Later, he worked for U.S. Intelligence, Counterintelligence, and the Army Intelligence." But in the book, The Murderers Among Us, which is part biography and part autobiographical, he describes being at a camp where a famous prisoner was, and this was Gustav Stengel, who's going to change his career later. And I'll go into the connections to San Paulo, Brazil, to Simon Wiesenthal and Stengel. But I do want to bring out the point here that he was in the CIC, the OSS, and U.S. Counterintelligence Corps after traveling through 12 concentration camps, separating from his wife in 1942, reuniting with her in 1945. Now, he was at a camp in charge. One of the people there was Fritz Stengel, who goes down with the Volkswagen people to San Paulo, Brazil. We'll get down to that in a little while again. Henry Kissinger was Counterintelligence Corps under Fritz Kramer. He was in charge of Klaus Barbie. And the American swastika, written by Charles Higham, mentions and goes into the subject that Klaus Barbie was in charge of Joseph Mengele. So again, the connection of these people in 1985. And remember back to the days right after the war, where Simon Wiesenthal is in the CIC and the OSS and U.S. counterintelligence and U.S. Army working for them. And Henry Kissinger is the counterintelligence group, along with other very top Nazis such as Otto Skorzeny and Klaus Barbie. Then Barbie goes down to Mengele and takes care of Mengele. Mengele is in Brazil, and Fritz Stengel is in Brazil. Klaus Barbie is in Bolivia. Henry Kissinger's connections have not severed from those people, and that's why that Fritz Kramer, the question was Fritz Kramer at Mengele's account, April the 12th, 1985. Very important. Now, in the years 1984 and 85, Simon Wiesenthal had a few events and associations, and we can detail them individually later, but just to get a little view of how far he came from 12 concentration camps at this point. In March 85, there was a dinner at Waldorf Astoria for him. Chairman of the dinner was Martin S. Davis, chairman of Gulf and Western. If you don't have the past broadcast I did on Mr. Blue Dorn from Vienna, from Gulf and Western, I can give you the numbers, or maybe people who have those tapes that you can hear them. This has a lot to do with Mr. Sidney Korshek in Hollywood and Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra is on the board of directors of Simon Wiesenthal and Gulf and Western, was and is closely associated with stock purchased by Michael Sindona for the Vatican. Getting back again to the Vatican Bank and Hermann Apps and the paychecks for Adolf Hitler. I'm not going to make all these connections for you now, but the fact that the chairman of the dinner was Martin S. Davis, not Marvin Davis from California or Denver, Colorado, but Martin S. Davis, chairman of Gulf and Western, giving a party for Wiesenthal in 1985. That was just 2 months before the president was going to go to the cemeteries at Bitburg, which was arranged in November of 84. 1985, the same time in March, a member of the Wiesenthal board, William Belzberg, B-E-L-Z-B-E-R-G, and I'll do more on that family, the Belzberg family, a very wealthy family from Canada, and a member of the family living in Beverly Hills, giving a fundraising for Wiesenthal Center in Beverly Hills, that $20 million center he wants, and the $5 million from the state of California. George Will was at the reception, a speaker at that party. May 29, 1984, the Wiesenthal Center sponsored a lecture on disinformation and foreign policy paralysis with guest Arnaud de Borchgrave, and I have brochures of their hosting it, the telephone number at the Wiesenthal Center. De Borchgrave, along with Wiesenthal, was offering that $1 million reward, and I don't have to go back to Reverend Moon. He's editor of that paper. Moon's links to Michael Ledeen, and de Borchgrave also, de Borchgrave, to the lie about the Soviet Union and Bulgarians trying to kill Pope John Paul II. Just think about these names. I'm bringing them out. I'm not going to go back with all their background now. Maybe later, or write them up in chapters, but associate Simon Wiesenthal with Arnaud de Borchgrave. Abraham Cooper, the associate dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, has a news bulletin called Social Action Update. And one of the references in that newsletter that was reprinted in the Los Angeles Times or the Herald, I forget which one at the time, October 23, 1984, a year after the Korean airline, talking and referring to the Soviet Union's downing of the Korean airline. While when Larry McDonald went down, he was chairman of Western Goals, and on the board of Western Goals is Edward Teller, who in March of 85 was writing bulletins and an article for the Wiesenthal Center on the effect of something like the effect of atomic bombs falling on Jewish heads. I have the title of the article, but I just want to tell you, again, the company he keeps. March 29th, 1985, Simon Wiesenthal got an award, the Grand Cross of Merit to Simon Wiesenthal from West Germany. This was exactly 37 days before the president was going to Bitburg. The president knew with Helmut Kohl that he would be attending the graves of the Waffen-SS as early as November 1984, and to show that it was not some mistake, he has a photograph of himself putting a wreath on the graves with the Waffen-SS tombstones in the background that hangs in the White House halls today. Another member of the Simon Wiesenthal board is Ivan Boesky, B-O-E-S-K-Y. He's been in the news quite a bit lately. He tried to gobble up and buy and manipulate a hunk of CBS stock at the time that Ted Turner wanted to buy, and he still does want to buy CBS. But according to news accounts and the Security Exchange Commission, they halted Ivan Boesky's manipulating the stocks, which would favor the control that CBS had over its own stock, which means it would go to Ted Turner and that in turn to people like Jesse Helms, who is behind this move. And Jesse Helms has close associations with and is part of the World Anti-Communist League, with the Waffen-SS, with the Death Squads and John Singlaub, and with Roberta Dobison from El Salvador, and is not a very nice person working with known Nazis. And why was Ivan Boesky, a financier, playing with this stock that would go into the hands of those people at the same time he's on the board of Wiesenthal Center? Another member on the board, this Mr. Belzberg from Canada, and they have offices around the country. There's two brothers that are listed on the board of the Wiesenthal Center. In addition to giving a dinner in Beverly Hills where George Will, one brother, gave a dinner where George Will was the main speaker, and I mentioned that. The other one is closely associated, according to an article I got from in Minneapolis from a friend, to a group linked to T-Bone Perkins. His name's been in the news, a financier, quite a bit. Perkins sends funds to Minneapolis to Senator Rudy Boschwitz, B-O-S-C-H-W-I-T-Z. Boschwitz is also funded by H.L. Hunt and the Texas oil people, but they're more than oil people. Hunt wanted to start an American Death Squad, and I'm not sure that wasn't what he started. Along with Clint Murchison, their names have been associated with the assassination of John Kennedy. And it's very important to realize that the interlocking connections of these various persons and institutions falls and goes right to the board then of the Simon Wiesenthal Organization. Wiesenthal is a member of a group called Freedom Incorporated. I'm not going to list the members. They're all right-wing, including Mrs. Solzhenitsyn and a very long list of people. But one of the people in this organization of Freedom Incorporated, along with Simon Wiesenthal, who is part of that board, is Leo Chern of the International Rescue Committee. He was involved with Isaac Don Levine and Spaz Rakin in bringing Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina Oswald to this country. He was linked to the SLA is the CIA story for Ronald Reagan and Edwin Meese of the kidnapping of Patty Hearst and the deployment of the SWAT teams and the attempt to create terrorism in the United States for a future police force. Another person on the board with Leo Chern and Simon Wiesenthal is Norman Redlich of the Warren Commission. And Norman Redlich's partner on the Warren Commission, Senator Arlen Specter, has been one of the visual members of Congress with Senator D'Amato trying to find Joseph Mengele and making connections of the drug links of Joseph Mengele in South America, so that the Warren Commission surfaces in the relationship of him to these people. Also, he worked with Prince Bernhard, according to a Washington Post story. I'm going to detail you all of the sentences. The Wiesenthal Foundation in 1979 was 90% funded from Dutch money. Dutch money, Prince Bernhard. Bernhard from IG Farben, Bernhard from the Waffen-SS, Bernhard from the resistance movement, accused in the book The Betrayal of Arnhem, holding the resistance movement, which was identical to what Klaus Barbie did, and he was rewarded. Prince Bernhard, who goes on to form the Bilderbergers. The money for the Wiesenthal Organization began 90% from the Dutch government, Royal Dutch Shell, and a group of people from Holland. About 70% non-Jewish people gave Wiesenthal his money to get started. So the links to Prince Bernhard are outrageous. And of course, when the war was over in May of 1945, Simon Wiesenthal is lying in the snow and walking along arm in arm with Prince Radziwill. And I'll just go into briefly a few pages of his own account of being with Radziwill. And then leaving the as Soviet Union moves west, they go to where the American armies are coming. Radziwill is allegedly the pretender. He passed away to the throne. If the monarchy were back in Poland, he was the brother-in-law of Jacqueline Onassis. He is the gentleman that Robert Kennedy, according to Mr. Borkin in the book The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben, was working not as a lawyer but advisor in helping hold the holdings of I.G. Farben together after the war. As I say, the son-in-law of Joe Kennedy, a knight of Malta, Joe Kennedy was Radziwill of the Polish monarchy with Simon Wiesenthal. Now, what was Radziwill doing in that environment during the war? When the Nazis were in Poland, they certainly would have nothing against the Polish monarchy such as Radziwill. I can't believe that they were just at the same camp together, walking in the snow and then surviving. And then all of a sudden, he has contacts with these international people from all over the world. Those are just a few contacts and names of Wiesenthal in 1984 and 85, including, as I say, the Grand Cross of Merit from the West German government, Helmut Kohl. And then we can go on to a few more details of the Mengele case, and then go back to Simon Wiesenthal. Who is Wiesenthal? Now, it was a shock to me when I started my research that Mark Lane was not doing what he was professing to do in finding the ways to expose the people who killed John Kennedy. I lived through this with various researchers who later turned out to either be sabotaging the direction that the investigation should have gone, or were known people with the intelligence community, like Bernard Fensterwald, some known, some not known, which role they played, but absolutely putting their foot, you know, tripping you over everywhere you go. You know, I had this with Bill Turner when he was sent here to do that story with on Rebel with me on the Nazis. And the problem I had, and literally had to kick him out and force every sentence there that should be there. Why did he want to delete it? We'll take a one-minute break and get onto this subject. It's very distasteful about how people do these things, but they do. And the reasons I'm not sure of, but we'll share the information anyway in about 1 minute on some more on Wiesenthal.